You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Ian, look at this.
What, it's a police box. What on earth is he doing here? Hey, these things are usually on the street. I feel it. Feel it, you feel it?
It's a faint vibration.
It's alive.
Earth Station Who, a fun mashup celebrating nearly 50 years of Doctor Who universe. Hold tight, you never know where the TARDIS is going next.
Who are you?
I'm glad you asked that again. Bit of adrenaline, dash of outrage and a hint of panic knitted my brain back together. I know exactly who I am. I'm the Doctor. Sorting out fair play throughout the universe. Now please, get off this planet while you still have a choice.
Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of the Earth Station Who podcast. That's right, folks. This time the Doctor takes on spiders once again, but this time on Earth. And it was an interesting episode. And we want to call this one, of course, Arachnids in the UK. And it is already, can you believe it? We are now four episodes into Doctor Who for the new season. And it's been interesting. I'm going up and down with this, and this one was fun. This one was exciting, and we're going to be talking all about it, folks at home. So if you haven't watched this one yet, we are going to be spoiling it.
How exciting! Spoilers!
Okay, you've been warned. All right, we definitely want to hear from you at home. Please write us at eswpodcast@gmail.com. But before we get started, let's welcome our co-hosts for this week. Of course, Mr. Mike Gordon is here.
Howdy.
How are you, my friend?
Peachy keen.
Ready for a little spider talk?
A little spider who?
Yeah, it's true. No one got bitten by a radioactive spider, though.
Spider who? Spider who?
Well, actually, technically, they were radioactive spiders. We'll get into that.
Yeah, people should have been running up going, bite me!
That's a whole different story. All right, and of course, Mary is here.
Wow, we are off to a great start. Hi, everybody. Jumped on my chest. Hello, everybody. It's great to be here.
Wow. Wow, this is going to be an interesting one. And we have a newcomer joining us tonight. We have the wonderful friend of the show, Julie Filipek, is here. Welcome.
Hi, everyone. Thanks for having me. Don't know what I'm getting myself into. When I first said, hey, I was going to do this, I didn't realize spiders were involved.
Mm-hmm. Spiders. Why did it have to be spider?
Why?
Why? It's going to be interesting to talk all about it. And of course, you know, like I said earlier, we're going to be spoiling it. So, you know, we might as well jump in with both feet. This one was an interesting one. It was, you know, the Doctor finally got the companions home, and literally a half hour after they left. That's pretty good for the Doctor.
Yeah, I was impressed by that.
Impressive.
Usually it's 12 months or, you know, a couple of years, but half hour, that's pretty amazing.
Poor Yasmin was like, nobody messaged me while I was gone. Like, she's like, but they were only gone a half an hour.
Such a, you know, 21st century thing. I have no voicemails or texts. Oh. So it was interesting. And, you know, of course, this, of course, took place all pretty much in Sheffield, right?
I believe so. Yeah, I'm not sure exactly where the hotel was, but I'm
Yes, because that's where the first one was. So obviously, and we got to meet Yaz's family in this one too.
Yeah, that was great. Actually, it was nice to get some insight into her character and her family life. See some on her part.
This is probably the strongest Yaz episode that we've had so far.
Mm-hmm. They reminded me too much of my family.
So did that creep you out more than the spiders?
It's like all up in their business. It's like, hey, so are you dating anybody? Okay. This is how we're going to play this game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you could see why Yaz might want to run away for a while.
It was interesting, though, because not one mentioned about Yaz being a police officer in this one. It's like they almost forgot.
Well, yeah. I mean, I kind of Yeah, I was really surprised that she didn't pull that card in front of Jack Robertson. Like when he started going off on her, I was really surprised she didn't be like, "Well, actually, I'm a police officer." Not that that would have he would have cared, but yeah, I did think that was interesting. I mean, she yeah.
He would have just gone, "So what? I'm American," you know.
Yeah, they, like I said, he would have just shook it off. But still, I'm surprised they didn't. She didn't go.
He was definitely the ugly American.
Oh, he basically, you know, and it's funny because it was so chopped towards Trump.
Oh, and yeah, it was a total parody of Trump.
Oh, of course, the whole thing with the hotels and getting into politics and such. And I loved how she said, "Oh, Donald Trump." He said, "Don't say that name. Just don't say that name." And it was actually neat to see Chris Noth in Doctor Who. Actually,
I thought he was really good. He really lent a lot to this episode. I mean, this could have been a real dud, actually. But I thought his performance was outstanding. It was nice to see. I think it's the first time that we've seen the Doctor have someone she can really like go up against in a way that she hasn't had yet. So I did really appreciate that.
Agreed. It was interesting because he was formidable for her, and she did not back down from him once. And, you know, it was pretty neat to see, you know, her going up, and you got to see Psychic Paper again.
Yes, that was a nice callback. I'm like, oh, hey, that's here still. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we haven't seen that in quite a while.
That's true. We haven't.
So unless you just flashed a piece of paper and just right in front of his face real quick, but you assume it's psychic paper. So it was neat to see that. And it was just, there was some really good scenes in this one, and the spiders themselves, they made me squirm a couple times. It was just like,
man, the spiders were a little too realistic. Like, hey, I want to go back to bubble wrap. I'm not sure I'm ready for this.
Yes, and let's have a spider the size of a bathtub and have it be realistic. Nope.
No.
Or as Graham said, the size of a van.
Yeah. There was a point in time where Yaz's mom. No, it's actually the research scientist, and she's like, she tells Graham and Ryan they have to go get a bigger one, and they're like, I would have been like, nope,
because the
only time I really jumped was when Ryan and Graham caught the one. And as they caught it, like Ryan was like, "Graham, behind you!" And there was a mass of them, and that made me jump. But I mean, I'm not a big fan of spiders, but that moment was like, ah, like all of them. I was like, geez.
Yeah, when they're all scurrying together, you're like, okay, no.
Well, it was interesting because I felt that a little bit when we first saw the one that was under the bed in Yaz's parents' neighbor's house. And it was just like, because, you know, seeing spiders on Doctor Who, I'm used to the Pertwee era, you know, where it's just like a big fake, you know, spider. But these look too damn real. It was just like, it was awesome.
The noises that they made.
Mm-mm. Oh, like the chittering.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was creepy.
Mm-hmm. It was like, ah. And everything. And then, oh, when that poor guy got dragged down through the bathtub.
Oh, man. Kevin.
Good old Kevin.
Kevin.
And he left his gun. But it was, not a way I'd ever want to go. Please just help me.
Jack Robertson calls for Kevin and then closes the door on him.
Right. Yeah, Noth is so good because this is just like the worst, and but he's playing it so fun that I really enjoyed it. I really enjoyed there was nothing that was not okay for him to do. Like he was totally unethical.
Yeah, I mean you had to kind of walk a fine line there because he could have gone too far into melodrama, but he kept it pretty well balanced.
Yeah, I mean, I think the tone was really fun. I mean, this is another Chibnall written episode, and I think there's a pace to it. It moves really fast. There's an element of like this like B movie fun type horror aspect of it, which is perfect for, you know, the Halloween season. And I enjoyed it. I really enjoyed the camaraderie. They found something for everybody to do here, and I didn't feel anybody was slighted. I thought that was really well done. The script is still like bad. I'm sorry, but the plot is just insane, and that's okay because it's kind of campy, so you can kind of get away with that. But talking about the ending makes very little sense to me at all, and I do have problems with it. But overall, I enjoyed it.
We've had kind of a dinosaurs on a spaceship vibe.
Yeah, good. Yeah, good call.
But mm-hmm. I agree that the ending did not work, and that reminded me of The Power of Three, which Chris Chibnall also wrote, which was good up until the time they get on the ship, and then just completely falls apart. And it was the same here. It just, the ending went nowhere. I think trying to show the Doctor in a compassionate light and how she cares for all creatures, but it just was flat.
Well, I think, you know, I mean, she's forced with, you know, they're forced with the two choices, right? You can either kill them, quote unquote, humanely, which is to lock them up and have them suffocate. Or you can, you know, Robinson's idea, which is just to blow them away. So, you know, I'm kind of disappointed that Chibnall didn't give the Doctor a third choice to save them. Like she should be smarter than that. Like she should have been like, I can solve this. Like every spider lives, you know, like she's got a TARDIS.
Yeah. Take them somewhere.
Right.
Yeah, she's the smartest person in the room. Like, I'm like, I don't understand why she just can't work around this in some way. Like, they couldn't figure out a way to work around it where she, because it's such a light and campy episode to end on this sort of like, just downer of an ending. Just,
well, you could have really set it up that way. I mean, but you would have had to heighten the stakes, and he didn't do that. He kept the tone kind of light. So yeah. He didn't come across as this big, angsty choice where she really has no choice for some reason. She has to kill them some way. It just sort of happens.
Mm-hmm. And what about all the spiders like around London and Sheffield? Like what, they're still out there doing their thing.
There's still one in the apartment.
Yeah, that's true. And like, and we don't know why. I don't understand why there was one in Graham's at all. Like that just makes no sense to me. And I mean, it died, I guess. And I don't know. It's just, It was, there's stuff in there that just doesn't make any sense.
And then like there was no discussion of cleanup, like, you know, not just the spiders themselves, but oh, that whole cesspit. How about someone fix that maybe?
Right. Right.
Yeah. Well, exactly.
They hired Halliburton, so.
No, exactly. Either that or, you know, call UNIT or something like that off screen.
I don't let UNIT clean that crap up. I wouldn't put that on UNIT. Come on, man. Like, UNIT's got better things to do than garbage.
The janitors of Doctor Who.
Exactly. But surely there are other, I mean, yeah, there are, like, that's the thing. That's one thing that's great about Doctor Who. I mean, sometimes it's unrealistic. Sometimes it seems really corny and campy. But, you know, the Doctor comes up with solutions that where we get a win out of these situations. We don't have to do this that way. And, here's a thought that I had, and this is like, I can't believe this is the first time I've had it, but I don't think they've ever really done anything with this. But I was like, theoretically, she could have pointed her screwdriver at his pistol and ceased it to function, correct?
Correct.
But I don't think the Doctor's ever done that. And I'm like, I guess that would be a game changer, because if the Doctor had that power, then like nobody could ever point a gun at the Doctor again because it would not mean anything. But I thought, well, surely with the Doctor being able to do anything like a lot with that screwdriver, it makes no sense for me why the Doctor couldn't ever, like any doctor couldn't ever just like say your guns don't work now.
The doctor has done that in the past. I don't remember when, but I remember seeing it. I think it might have been like the Tenant doctor or something, that, you know, he's gone up against people who had guns and he used the sonic screwdriver to disable them.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember it, but I mean, it would have been a great time to do it then. But I mean, in this episode,
yeah, because the poor spider was dying already anyway.
Yeah,
couldn't breathe.
I'm surprised she couldn't think of a way. I'm surprised she couldn't think of a way to save it.
Well, I think they just conveniently forgot about that because they didn't want to make it too easy. But it didn't matter because it still didn't make any sense.
Right. Let's march all these spiders into this panic room and just, I mean, like what? I mean, there's supposed to be air in there. So, I mean, I guess they cut off the air somehow.
Well, and I assume they cut the air supply.
Right. And it just, you know, but and there's a lot of dead spiders in this panic room, which is really gross.
Made me think what they used to do in animal shelters.
I don't want to think about that.
But, I mean, that's what they did. And I thought, you know, this has really unfortunate connotations. And isn't, you know, it's the same problem you had. The doctor should have thought of a better way. The doctor would have thought of a better way.
No, there's already been protests from animal groups about this episode.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Because of the treatment of the spiders.
Yeah, the spiders weren't real people.
No. No spiders were harmed in the making of this episode.
They're all CG. You know?
I know, but it was interesting. And this is another one where, you know, once again, the doctor doesn't finish the job. If you think about it, every episode so far this season, she's left, you know, loose ends.
Will the spiders come back?
No, I'm not even, they might. Because, you know, the spiders weren't all at the hotel. That was just their focal part.
Or actually, nothing really happens to the Chris Noth character.
No. He just runs off. He had I had a very, very slight reaction because I briefly thought of Harriet Jones in the Christmas Invasion when she shot off the nukes. And I was like, that was almost essentially what he did here. So I was just like, maybe he'll come back as kind of that, you know, secondary character as actual president, possibly.
I thought of that too. That's a good point because I thought of that too. And the difference is that after Harriet does what she does, and you can kind of understand why she does it, it's very similar, but the doctor has a moment where he stands up to her very confidently and undermines like her entire life, really. And we don't get that from this doctor, which is unfortunate because that would have been a way to end this episode as well. To just be like, you know, because what is he gets the last word, right? Because he says like, you know, that's why I'm going to be president or whatever. And like, she could have, we know that she's capable of like undermining that.
Absolutely.
She's done it before.
Heck, she's the president of the Earth.
Good point. And now I think
that's still in play, but.
And now she says dude, which is even better.
Dude, where's my TARDIS?
She's got a little bit of Lebowski in her. Is that true?
Mm-hmm. I just love that. It was just like, I guess I say dude now.
There were some nice moments with Graham here when he goes back to his flat and Grace is and isn't there. And I have to say, Bradley Walsh has really been fantastic.
Yes.
Episodes. I mean, and I felt his grief. I mean, it was palpable. You really felt like he was grieving somebody.
Oh, very much so.
Sorry. I like that they actually did went that direction because I think in one of the previous episodes, Ryan seemed to be having a tough time getting over it. And Graham, it just seemed a little bit too easy to a certain degree. So I thought it was actually kind of nice that when he gets back and he's like in the calm, you know, presence of his home, it came all back again. So.
Exactly.
He kind of addresses that at the end when he says, I need to travel with you. So I'm not dwelling on this huge loss. It helps to travel with you. And that was nice too at the end when where they ask or they basically tell her they have to travel with her.
Yes, we have it's official. We have a Team TARDIS.
And I think they're a good team. I mean, they interact very well together.
A Team Ugly TARDIS. Sorry. I'm sorry. It's like
team
I forgot
because we designed TARDIS.
We didn't really see much of it, you know, and everything with everything that happened last week, I just kind of forgot about it. And then, you know, then they step in the TARDIS at the end of this one. I'm like, ooh, oh, yeah, I'd forgotten.
It even felt
it's
even
gonna,
more
cramped. It's going to take them some getting used to.
Exactly. It even felt more cramped this episode than even before.
Yeah, it's very busy. I mean, they really, you know, take out about 3/4 of the stuff in there and better.
To your point, Mike, I don't know if it's intentional that she's quote unquote not finishing the jobs here, but she did say that she's still trying to figure herself out in this episode. So maybe that's the arc that they're taking her this season, you know.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
It's maybe just, it is intentional.
I don't know, but it just seems like every episode they're leaving, you know, threads behind, and you know, each one
or webs.
Come on. No, I know. I know. This was very well acted, though. You know, considering, and I liked all the characters, the new ones, and you know, the scientist. I liked the politician / Donald Trump type character, and you know, I liked Yaz's family. And like Julie said earlier, it hit home in a lot of different ways in this one. So it was actually pretty cool. And I just, you know, I enjoyed this one. And, you know, I think for me, it was the weakest of the four so far. Mm-hmm. And I enjoyed it still.
Mm-hmm. I mean, Chris Chibnall's strength is not plot.
No,
God no. Say that, but his strength is character. I mean, I do feel like I'm getting to know these characters and I care about them. And I, you know, even just we didn't get to spend that much time with their family, but you definitely got a sense of who they were and the kind of people they were.
Mm-hmm. Which is fine. I mean, we've got, you know, a lot of family in New Who that we spent way too much time with. So. Like, it's okay to just say, hey, here they are. And then, you know, we will see you maybe again later. But we don't have to keep coming back to you.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And, you know, it was interesting. I just hope they don't turn into, like, Rose's family, you know, where they show up all the time. Or, you know, Martha's family, you know, like, going back to that era where, you know, let's bring in everyone's family members and such. It was like, no, 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 no. And then the whole thing, you know, what we had with Ryan's father, even in this, because, you know, even had that, you know, continued on in the storyline.
Yeah, I didn't know where they were going with that. And they didn't go anywhere. So that's cool.
Yeah, well, I think that was just another little insight into Ryan's character.
And I think it helped strengthen a little bit with Graham and Ryan, because I think also another reason why Ryan would be interested in traveling is I think he's learning to be with Graham a little bit more.
Well, it would be understandable that Ryan would be distrustful of father figures mm-hmm. in his family. You know, I think we've developed that. So it makes sense, the wariness he has around Graham. It's nice to watch the relationship develop.
Yeah, well, and it's, you know, even though we think we know him and his family relationship and everything, we really don't, because even though we got to meet Grace and, of course, Graham that we're hanging out with and everything, we forget that he, like, what is with his parents? Like, we have no idea what happened with his parents, right?
I think they mentioned his mom is dead and his father's basically bailed.
Right, right. But so, I mean, there's still, you know, some more insight they could give us on both of those.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. You know, the father doesn't seem like he was around at all during the kid's life.
But, you know, to your point, that's exactly what Chibnall does, like, especially on the course of Broadchurch. I mean, he doesn't give you like mass amounts of character information in one go, you know, right from the beginning. It's like a little bit here, a little bit here in this episode, mm-hmm. a little bit here in this episode. So by the end, you really know the characters really well. But so I would imagine that that's going to continue, where we get little pieces of insight, hopefully for every character. Like I said, I thought Yaz was being underutilized in the last couple of episodes, but I thought she was better than this. And so.
Yeah, he's. I think he probably. I feel like he makes a better showrunner than individual writer. And I think the reason is that he works.
It's like the total opposite of Moffat.
he likes to develop story on a long arc, and he has trouble with it and with the pacing in standalone episodes. And it showed a bit in this episode more than some of the others he wrote.
Yeah.
Even though, I mean, it was still enjoyable. I definitely enjoyed this episode. I mean, yeah, it's interesting. He and Moffat are very different.
Oh, yeah.
Quite opposite.
And to be honest, I mean, to RTD different too. I mean, this is not a return to the RTD era. This is, I mean, he's charting new ground here, I think.
Yeah.
I did also like it. I loved the doctor's warning to the companions when they voluntarily came back, and she, you know, was warning them, this will change you. You will not be the same people who are leaving with me right now.
Yeah, that actually was an interesting moment too, because that is not something the doctor usually does. It's just like, nope. Oh, come aboard. You know, nothing about how awful this could go.
It seemed like kind of a weird change, because at the very beginning when she was dropping them off, she seemed very reluctant to let them go. And then at the end, she's like, well, but are you sure? So it just seemed kind of, you know, interesting that was kind of like a reaction that she had when they were like, okay, we're going to come with you.
Mm-hmm. And they're each coming for their own reasons. It was just really interesting how it was done. And I enjoyed that part. You know, it was neat to see, and, you know, it felt like it was a good fit. And I like how they started calling themselves Team TARDIS. It fits.
I don't know if that's ever been officially used by a group in the TARDIS, but now it is.
I think many of a podcast have used it.
Yeah, but. I think everybody else has used it, perhaps.
Right, but that's one of those terminologies, yeah, that's been done by the fans and everything, but I don't think it's ever been actually in an episode, you know.
Mm-hmm. I mean,
where they call themselves Team TARDIS.
And they do function well as a team, and that's nice to see.
Mm-hmm. And they're all growing on me, and I think over the four episodes so far, I think you've seen some very interesting personal growth. I think we got the most out of Yaz in this one, because you had her family surrounding her, especially her mom. And I can't stand her sister, so it's okay.
Yeah, I don't think anyone could stand her sister, including
I do want to see, you know, going forward, I do want to see more moments of the Doctor with. She's really, like, obviously Jodie and Bradley, I don't know if they have a history of working together, but they're more accomplished actors. So they've got a chemistry that I think works. And we've seen that so far in almost every episode. But I don't think we've seen that play out much with the other two. And I think going forward, it would be really important, if they're going to divvy up the team a little bit, to put, you know, the Doctor with one of the other two, to have some pretty good moments, because mm-hmm. they're having decent moments to, like, by themselves, but I feel like Graham has a connection with the Doctor more than the other two do right now.
Well, yeah. She's had a couple of moments with Graham. She hasn't had too many with the other two, but
yeah, that's what I'd like to see that. Yeah,
she had some nice little bits though with Yaz in this one.
A little bit. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, are you two a couple? Oh, no, no, no.
Are we?
I just thought that was really innocently done.
I like that. The other thing, too, is that it was kind of asked both of her and the Doctor and her and Ryan. So it was just like, male, female, doesn't matter. You know, yeah. So I thought that was interesting.
And I do not want to see a relationship like, you know, like a physical love relationship between Yaz and Ryan. Exactly.
Any of the four. Nope.
Yeah,
no,
that's just no. not.
Yeah. Nope.
I said it a long time ago. In this season, the one thing I wanted was no romance within any of it.
Last time, like, some hanky-panky was done in the TARDIS. We got, you know, River out of it, so that wasn't so bad. So maybe it's a good thing, but no, I'm not looking forward to that. So I got to ask you, there's a sequence or a scene where it's kind of just like, it almost feels like it's off script, and I didn't replay it. I need to replay it, actually, to find out more information about what she said. But, I mean, the doctor's kind of babbling, and at one point she says, sister, I was a sister once, or did I have a sister? Like, she's going through some stuff about, and sort of hinting that she might have been a woman in the past before this. Did you guys catch that at all?
Oh, yeah. It was pretty obvious.
Now, as interesting as that is, please don't give us another, like, doctor from the past, like another incarnation. Like, let's stop. Like, the numbering is just off already. Like,
yeah, like, I don't think he's going to really go anywhere with that. I think he's probably just teasing.
Yeah, but, you know, it's one of those things where, you know, Big Finish gets a hold of, and all of a sudden it's like, oh!
Well, whatever. They can do whatever.
because remember last week? No, it was the week after the week before, right? Where there's a secret about her youth, right? That we're going to learn at some point, probably, because you don't open that door unless you like plan to use it at some point. So I'm like, please don't give us another doctor's past incarnation thing. Well, like, I don't.
Yeah. I mean,
like, please let us
comes let heart in the books.
Let Hartnell be the first. Like, I really do want, like, I don't want to take that away from him.
There a lot of the books and a lot of, I have noticed that a lot of New Who is greatly influenced by the books that were written in between the classic Who and New Who. And that is a big thing, that the Doctor has this secret past that makes him or her special in some way. Whatever that is, different authors have taken it in different directions. And so that may be the influence he was using for that little thing. But I got a feeling that he's not, at least I hope he doesn't overcomplicate things.
Yeah. Well, you know, that's, it's just one of those things where I'm like, oh, there's a flag, you know, just hope that it's not more than that.
No, that's a good way to put it, actually. And, you know, let's not overcomplicate it. You know, yeah, Moffat added the War Doctor, but, you know, I don't think we need to have other incarnations that we just don't know about. There's lore, and then there's lore. And, you know, let's not ruin the lore, folks.
Yeah, I think, you know, I think there's enough to go on without trying to rewrite things. Like, I think there's enough, like, open spaces that you can play around with without having to break things. Like I said, it just kind of leads to, you know, sometimes these creators just think it's a good idea and they don't, you know, it's like, what is the phrase from Jurassic Park? They think, you know, they're so busy going, oh, that would be really cool to do this, but they don't really
think
about, like, yeah. Right, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. They don't really think, oh, maybe that wouldn't be a good idea, like, overall. Like, it'd be a cool thing to do, but not really. So, and I don't know, like, I know a little, I know basic information about Chris. I don't even know, do we know, like, who his quote-unquote doctor is, like, when he was growing up, or is he a fan of the show or anything like that?
No.
I'm just kind of curious what... It's kind of curious what era he like kind of looks at and goes, that's my doctor.
You know? Yeah, I'm pretty sure he was a fan of the show, but I don't know.
Yeah, that would be kind of interesting to know. Another thing I've noticed is that his name's not on the front.
What do you mean?
Like, even though, I mean, we all refer to him as the guy, right? I mean, he's the executive producer, but he's the showrunner. He's the main man behind Doctor Who right now. And yet his name is not listed in the front of the show. They specifically mention, who is it? Don't they give a credit? They give a credit to the cast. And then they give a credit to
the writer. Usually after.
Know, it's before that. Is it the director? I don't know. I just noticed that, like, yeah, that there was another name in there that I was like, oh, that's a weird credit to give. Like, that's never been done before, I don't think.
Was it mm-hmm. the executive producer Brian Minchin?
Maybe. It's a woman. And I can't think of her name.
There's a script editor who's a woman.
Yeah, would she be in the
main cast? Or it could have been the director, because the director was a woman.
But I've noticed it the last few episodes. Like the first time we saw an actual credit sequence, I noticed it. I was like, oh, that's an interesting like choice to put there.
Oh, and I'll then, have to pay attention next time. I didn't really...
Yeah, I'll have to make a note of it as well. Mm-hmm. I just
because I see his, you know, under executive producer, it's Chibnall and one other person. So it's interesting when you see it.
Yeah, I mean it's all like good, you know, and all that. I mean, I'm not saying, you know, Chris Chibnall put his name like first, like Chris Chibnall's Doctor Who, you know.
Yeah. Well, I would have expected that more from Moffat, but, you know.
Oh, ouch. Oh no, I don't actually. I think I would have expected that more from
Moffat. that's harsh.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, it was interesting to see what, you know, was happening. And you know what? I'm just, you know, thinking this is a good way to, you know, I think they're doing a good way of making the Doctor her own, and Jodie is taking this to the top.
Oh, Jodie is so fantastic.
Mm-hmm. I have not one complaint about her. Yeah. The look on her face when she was saying bye to everybody. Oh, well, I'm going to go back to my apartment. I'm going to go back to our house, you know, check it out and everything. And the doctor looked so sad. I guess I'm going to head out. It's like, do you want to come for tea? Yes, I'd love to. Yeah, sure.
And I also really like her comedic timing, her comedic moments.
Yeah. Oh, very much so. So she can handle it all.
She really can. I am really impressed by her. They chose the right person.
Mm-hmm. That's why I think I like this episode more than some of the others that we've seen so far, because I really like the interplay that she gets to have with Chris Noth here. And it just, like she, like I said, it's good to see that she has someone that she can go sort of toe-to-toe with and not back down and interact with in a fun way. I just don't feel like we've had that yet this season until now.
Yeah, they're having a lot of fun bouncing off each other. You can tell.
Yeah, absolutely.
Enjoying it.
So, Julie, have you enjoyed like the season overall?
I have. I love Jodie. I'm very happy about that. One of the things that's harder for me, I think, than even some of the writing pieces is the music. I'm kind of a huge music nerd.
You miss Marie?
So, a little bit, but I think one of the things that I've, you know, noticed from the past two episodes is, you know, bringing a lot more radio music, I guess, into it. Because there was the one song in the Rosa Parks and then, you know, the one here. I just don't want it to go down a route where we're having a lot more of that. I prefer having score I think that's more of a personal preference, but I hope we're just not going down that route, because I was just like, it's a little jarring to me.
Yeah, it's kind of a thing now in other shows, especially American shows, to have the pop song at the end during the dramatic moment. Really, yeah. They don't make that a continuous thing here.
Yeah, good point.
Hey.
Because otherwise, like, I'm getting used to the score, because, you know, it's usually just, you know, getting used to a new person. It takes a little bit of time, but I'm okay.
Mm. Yeah. I mean, we brought up the same thing for the Rise Up song during the Rosa episode, and how, and I thought it actually kind of detracted.
Well, at least the spiders digged good music, yeah, so it was cool.
So I don't know. I'm kind of with Graham on that, where he was like, they're running towards that.
Yeah, I mean, I could understand them running away from it.
Yes, exactly.
Or I thought, you know, maybe they'll play the Sex Pistols.
That would have been perfect.
I wouldn't have complained.
Yeah, especially considering the title, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But getting the rights to it—it's
always tricky getting licensed music. So
exactly.
I don't. Yeah, that's another reason why I kind of hate to see them sort of use it more, because we all know how problematic it can be license-wise later on. So, you know, you just kind of, if you can avoid that during the production of the show, yeah, I would say do that. You know, if you don't need it, don't use it, because it could cause problems later on.
They're probably more savvy about that now, and they license.
Well, you think so, but...
But then,
you
know, something new comes along, and
yeah, exactly. There it goes. Exactly. Yeah. Oh, you didn't cover that. So now, like, oh, well, now all releases of Doctor Who for the Rose episode, we had to replace Rise Up with, you know...
Uptown Funk.
You had to go there, didn't you? But it's interesting, because, you know, truthfully, it was good to hear it. But if they don't get the rights to it, we're going to get a repeat of what happened with Quantum Leap and also WKRP in Cincinnati, where they couldn't get the rights to the songs they played in those episodes for the Blu-ray or the DVDs. And, you know, you had trouble getting WKRP for a long time. And so, you know, same thing. They had to put in other songs. So, you know, I guess we'll be hearing Happy instead when the spiders come out, you know.
And it's interesting, too, because there were a few songs that were in David Tennant's era, but I think those were created specifically for the show. So even if you're looking to have something that seems like a pop song, you could create new material.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That you then have the rights for. Right.
Good call.
So.
Mm-hmm. Now, it's a lot of the stuff that was used in the Tennant era was all original. And so you could actually download those. And a lot of them you could even get off iTunes, which is pretty cool.
I love those. I have them.
Well, there you go. So it was pretty cool. All right. We've been talking a while for this, and, you know, we're just going around and around. Any final thoughts before we go ahead and rate this episode?
I think we've said a lot.
I totally would have believed that he was Ed Sheeran.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. You're Ed Sheeran? Oh.
Sorry. I just thought that was a really fun one. Because, you know, it's like the doctor isn't necessarily going to know, you right. know, it, those type of people. So it was just great.
Mm-hmm. Don't you know who I am? You're Ed Sheeran?
I also don't know that, because the doctor is like the smartest person in the room. So in some ways it's just as cool if she's just playing him. Like, yeah, I know who you are, but I'm not going to admit it. You know, like, I'm not going to give you the satisfaction of me knowing who you are. Like,
right.
like so it plays either way.
And I loved it. You know, when Chris Noth's character was like, who put her in charge? And they said, we did, you know,
everybody to him. Yeah.
Which was pretty awesome. So I think, you know, you're getting the building of a great TARDIS team. So, all right, ratings now. 1 out of 5 TARDISes, 1 being the worst, 5 being the best.
We're not going to rate it spiders?
You want to do spiders?
Oh, no.
One from the smallest, five to the biggest that are on the ceiling. Waiting
one for the most squashed spider, five for the beautiful, still moving around spider.
All right. Mikey, since you brought up the spiders tonight, you get to rate it.
I'm going to give this one a solid four. It's fun. The energy is great. The rewatch factor on this is great because I could watch Jody and Chris. Just their scenes together are great. And the interplay there. And plus I do like the scenes with Yasmin and Yasmin's family. And Graham and Ryan actually, you know, doing their thing. They make a good team as well. So I really thought that this is appropriate that they label themselves as Team TARDIS and they become official in this episode, because I think this is the first episode where they're convincing and they're great as a team. So, credit to Chris, because those are the good things about this episode. And that's why I gave it a four. I mean, unfortunately there's some, you know, crappy plot and bad ending. So I can't go any higher than that. And I could definitely see where that would knock it down for a lot of people. But fortunately for me, the pluses way outweigh the minuses.
Okay. Julie.
I will actually also give it a four. For me, some of it is, I think while the character of Robertson was great, it almost went a little bit too far into that stereotypical kind of businessman scenario and political things as well. And then kind of that ending that was a little bit hanging there. But again, I think the play between the characters was great. There were a few good one-liners, a few good jokes that come in, which is nice for lightening up the mood. And I think that's mainly it. And the spiders actually looked pretty real. So I've been actually impressed with the production value.
Cool. All right, Mary.
I think I'm going to give this 3.75 spiders. Thanks for that poor three-quarter spider. That's been along.
He's only got six
legs instead of eight. But I enjoyed this episode. Overall, I enjoyed it. But there are some real problems here. The plot is just non-existent, rather. It kind of devolves into a very simple base under siege story as they're running through the hotel. But it's still fun to watch. And that's mostly because of the characters and the actors that are playing them. They do a great job of bringing the characters to life and giving it both comedy and pathos. And Jody was outstanding. It was really fun to watch her interacting with Chris Noth. And I have to say that I think this is the weakest of the four, but it's still a good, fun episode. And I'm really enjoying this series so far. Good job, Chris.
Cool. All right. I'm going to give it a 3.5. I enjoyed it, but I said earlier, this is the weakest one of the first four. I enjoyed the acting. I love Jody. And 3.5 is still good, especially 3.5 spiders. You know, it was interesting to see, you know, I'm glad we saw more of Yaz's family and learning a little more about her character and her thinking and such. But, you know, I want to see more. And the scenes with Grace and Graham were just awesome. And I loved how at the beginning when he was seeing her like in the mirror or behind him, you know, it was all, she was all fuzzy until the final time you saw her. And I thought that was really well done. But, you know, the story was And, you know, it was fun. It was great hearing Judy squee every time the spider showed up. And, you know, half the time she had their hands over her eyes and she was like trying to peek through her fingers. It was perfect for that. But I was just like, okay, you know, we've seen this before. I did think it was neat that it ended up not being anything alien or such. It was just, you know, humanity at its best dumping stuff underneath, you know, a town and, you know, whatever the chemicals and such mutating the spiders. And, you know, that's just, there were so many different political, you know, digs in this, you know, towards Trump, towards the environment, towards global warming. It was just, it was interesting to see and hear some of the stuff the doctor was saying. We definitely want to hear from you guys at home, though. Please write us at eswpodcast@gmail.com. You know, what were your guys' thoughts on this one? We definitely are very interested to hear from you guys. We will be back again once again next week, and we are going to be looking at the, ready for this one? The Saranga Conundrum. That's a mouthful right there. And it's going to be interesting to see. It looks, from the preview, it looks interesting. It's going to be, it looks like it takes place in space or in the future. So I'm going to be curious to see where this one goes. Of course, let me thank everybody for being here. Want to thank our patrons for helping out with, you know, the show. You know, any little bit helps. Of course, as we always like to say, Mike has been doing some extra shows with Ashley Pauls, talking about movies she's never seen before and, you know, always regretted. Great review of Jaws, and I think they're doing right now North by Northwest. So it's pretty cool stuff they're doing. And, you know, please, you know, if you want, we love giving you free shows, but in the ability to give you free shows, you know, we do need some help here up on the station. So why don't you become a patron for as little as a quarter a week? You can help support the ESO network and Earth Station Who is a proud member of that network. So please just go to patreon.com/ESO network. Doesn't get much easier than that. All right, everyone. Thanks for listening tonight. Thank you, Mike.
It's my pleasure.
Mary?
Oh, absolutely. I had a lot of fun with spiders. In fact, I had a spider clip. Somebody go to Etsy, look up eVision Arts.
Awesome. And of course, Julie, you made it through your first episode.
Yeah, thank you. I suppose I could be invited again. You didn't scare me off this time.
Damn. Always try.
We tried so hard.
I know. The spiders just didn't work, so I guess we'll have to have her back for some other creature. Definitely, we will be back again next week. We will see you here on Earth Station Who. Peace. And we're done. Ta-da.
You have been listening to Earth Station Who, a bi-weekly pop culture podcast dedicated to all things Doctor Who, featuring talents from across the universe. All topics on the show are the sole opinions of the individual and are used for entertainment value alone. You can subscribe to our podcast up on iTunes, Stitcher, or follow our blog at www.esopodcast.com. You can also follow us up on Facebook, Twitter, or Google+. If you enjoyed the show, please leave feedback up on iTunes.
Yes, yes, hello. Let's talk about the Flopcast.
Every week, we give podcast listeners a chance to come and join us in Chickentown,
where we talk about Saturday morning cartoons, comics and science fiction conventions, music and concert reports, 70s and 80s pop culture, and for no good reason, chickens.
Boy, we're weird.
Oh, we are ridiculous.
We're proud members of the ESO Network, and you can find us at flopcast.net.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping through Amazon.com or the TeePublic store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.